Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people, to make informed food choices, and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, articles and essays, workshops and lectures, a cooking DVD, and an award-winning cookbook called The Joy of Vegan Baking, and of course through this podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting CompassionateCooks.com as well as JoyofVeganBaking.com. Today's sponsor is a Canadian listener. I'm convinced I have more Canadian listeners than American listeners, and her name is Anne Sturgeon. Anne sent me a beautiful email, and I thought I would just share it with you, and it includes a bit of her story. She wrote, "Dear Colleen, thank you for all you are doing to help reduce animal suffering and bringing about my true awakening. For so many years, I felt completely on my own when it came to trying to help animals. From a child, I was aware that meat came from animals, and I knew that I didn't want to eat my friends. But slowly, as time passed, the very difficult child that I was, my mom would say fussy eater, bought into the lie that we were meant to eat meat, and sadly, a point came when meat was the main focus of my main meals. That changed about 20 years ago, when, as an adult with two children, I stepped out and declared I was vegetarian. Unfortunately, I believed a vegan diet was unhealthy and unnecessary, so I continued to eat eggs and dairy. The lie continued. Finally, I found the Christian Vegetarian Association, CVA, and my life changed. Suddenly, I was in contact with like-minded people committed to making a difference. I would go out leafleting, but still, I had no like-minded friends to share my passion with. Thanks to the CVA, I was led to your site, and I've been one of your strongest fans ever since. I listen to your podcast while driving in my car, and it's like having a friend in the car with me. You're a breath of fresh air. I love the compassion you show and the gentle way you have of knocking holes in the opposition's claims. When I turned 50 in 2006, I decided that my birthday present to myself was to turn vegan. Life begins at 50. I couldn't believe the freedom it gave me. It was like a veil falling away. The knowledge of all those animals suffering just to make me unhealthy while contributing to global warming, it's crazy. I continued to leaflet for the CVA, but didn't feel I was reaching anybody. So in the spring of 2007, I started a small group in my home with the support of my husband. We call it ARG, an Animal Awareness Recreation Group. We meet about once every 6 weeks. In an afternoon evening, we include two documentary DVDs or one DVD and a guest speaker. Topics range from animals, the environment, our health, and sometimes touches on Christianity. We always have a vegan potluck. The smallest number of people that have attended has been 12, the largest 19. Thank you for the difference you have made in my life. You are one of my heroes. Thank you, Anne. Thank you for everything you do. Anne is active in many other ways besides leafleting and doing this group. She also tables at environmental events in her area in Ottawa, Canada. And I'm just so impressed with people like Anne who don't stop at just being vegan, but who also sees opportunities for spreading the word even more. So thank you so much, Anne. You are my hero. All of you who are doing work on behalf of animals and speaking on behalf of animals, you're my heroes too. And thank you for supporting Compassionate Cooks. And thank you for providing a place of support for other vegans and, of course, for supporting Compassionate Cooks. I'm very grateful for your support and for the support of the one-time sponsors as well as the monthly sponsors, without whose help I would have a really hard time devoting so much time and resources to this podcast. Monthly sponsorships are a super easy way to show your support. You get recipes right away, and then you get recipes every few months, along with some other little gifts, depending on the amount. There's $5 a month, there's $10 a month, $15, $20 a month. You can choose whatever amount works for you. If every regular listener of this podcast became a monthly sponsor, it would provide us with much needed support and resources. So I really appreciate all you can do. If you are able and willing to help, please visit CompassionateCooks.com, click on Support Our Podcast, and thank you very much. Vegetarians learn pretty quickly that when you come out as a vegetarian, when you declare your vegetarianism publicly, as Anne said she had done, you not only become people's confessional, but you become the recipient of some statements or questions that are, let's say, not very well thought out sometimes. And it's really funny because though that person may have no idea that you've heard that question or comment a million times before, they pose it as if they've come up with the ultimate argument against vegetarianism that nobody else has thought of before. And though I think I've heard all of them by now, I'm sometimes still surprised. But in the spirit of good advocacy and good communication, I try to listen and respond with compassion. Because frankly, I'm just thrilled that the topic comes up at all, that the conversation happens at all. The trick is to act like you're hearing the question for the first time. But truthfully, often what happens in the course of this conversation, if you give it enough time, if you let the person really hear what they're saying, they wind up hearing kind of the absurdity of their question. Or in response to your knowing smile, they realize that you've heard this question before, and it kind of lightens up the mood. Now, I've already addressed some questions and responses in various other episodes, but I thought it would be good to address some others because there are a lot of them. And I titled this episode, Are You Serious? Because when the questions are the most absurd questions, I'll admit to having the occasional temptation to look at the person straight in the eye and say, Are you serious? Are you really asking me that question? Did that just come out of your mouth? Are you kidding? Right? But I don't say that because, first of all, I don't think it would be very effective to respond that way. That's not entirely true. I mean, if there's someone I'm really close with, if there's someone I have a comfortable relationship with, I will say that. I have said, like, are you serious? Come on. Because sometimes people really know how absurd their questions are. But that same question can be asked with just a change in tone, because I do think it's an important question. Are you serious? Sometimes people are just goading you on. Sometimes they're just making a joke that they think you've never heard before. They don't know that you've heard that joke over and over and over. Sometimes they're just trying to trivialize your genuine concern for animals. Sometimes they want to hear themselves talk. So I think it's really helpful to say, are you serious? Do you really want to have a conversation? Do you want me to respond to that? Are you really asking me that question? That way you can reel the dialogue in and get a really clear idea of your footing. Plus, you won't be wasting your breath. You know, because if someone asks you a question that is absurd or obnoxious, if you start answering, first of all, you're already kind of getting into this absurd territory that I don't think is a really safe place to be. But also you might be defensive, you might feel annoyed, and so that's going to come out in your answer. So it also helps you gauge whether you should even waste your time or your breath, because again, the person's not always really interested in an answer when they ask you a question. So asking, are you serious? It helps you determine whether or not they're really serious before you respond, so you don't wind up feeling frustrated or belittled or caught off guard. Now, sometimes it's obvious, obviously, and I've talked a number of times about the importance of speaking your truth and really trying to understand where the other person is coming from and being willing to engage in a dialogue. Questions like, do you miss meat? Or aren't you hungry a lot? Those questions could be a real opportunity for discussion about food, about nutrition, about the practical aspects of being vegan, etc. But a question like, don't you care about plants? Is clearly designed to belittle your concern for animals and to try and catch you at being imperfect or hypocritical. Now, I'll return to this particular question in a moment, but knowing when to respond and when to just smile, I think, is really important. This is my personal opinion. You can take this or leave this. This is just how I look at it and how I approach it. And the reason I'm saying all this is because this being animal rights and our daily eating habits and our daily purchasing habits and our morals and our values and our ethics is a pretty big deal. And it can stir up really emotional reactions in people. And I know a lot of vegetarians who wind up feeling really upset or frustrated because they feel bullied, but also because they may not know the answers to some of the questions they're asked. And you know what? Some questions don't have to be answered. Some questions don't deserve to be answered. And we have to gauge that when we're talking to people. Don't feel you have to defend yourself all the time. There's a difference between speaking up for animals and speaking up for your truth and being defensive, defending yourself. You know what I mean? Also, if people think that you are just going to get upset every time the subject is brought up, they're probably not going to feel safe coming to you when they are genuinely interested. And they will be genuinely interested. It may not be right away, it may not be on your time frame, but just by being the vegan in the room, you will plant seeds. I guarantee it. Now, I don't want to imply that you act in such a way that's unnatural to you, but honestly, what I'm talking about here are communication and advocacy skills, right? And the ultimate question is, do I want to be right or do I want to be effective? So when I say, act like you've heard the question for the first time, I mean do it in such a way that reflects your personality, but it really is an effective strategy for handling these situations, for handling these questions, because if you're going to be an uncloseted vegetarian, and for your sake, and the animal's sake, and for the sake of others that you want to inspire, I suggest you consider it. If you're going to be an uncloseted vegetarian, you're going to hear these questions again and again and again. And I suggest that you develop some skills that will make it easier for you to deal with, even enjoyable for you to deal with, and of course, more effective. So let's recap so far. Number one, see each encounter with each individual person you meet as a new and exciting opportunity. Though you may have heard this question before a million times, it may be the first time that person is asking it, you know? So just kind of assume that this is the first time they're asking it. Number two, treat each person who asks that question with patience, understanding, and compassion. Though their question may seem absurd to you, because maybe you've taken some time to think about it or talk about it with others, they may be asking it from a very genuine place of concern or curiosity. By the same token, patience, understanding, and compassion does not equal self-effacing. Don't allow yourself to be bullied or ridiculed. And this goes for young people out there, especially. I'm sure it's easy to be intimidated if you're a teenager or a young person and everyone's telling you that you don't understand and that you're too young or you're too emotional. But any criticism you receive for trying to live a compassionate and healthful life is born out of fear. Whether it's your parents who are fearful that you're not going to be healthy on a vegan diet, and of course you can work together to get educated about this, or your friends who are fearful that you're going to judge them, or your boyfriend or girlfriend or wife or husband who's fearful that you're going to be a different person, it's all the same thing, fear. So try and understand where they're coming from and address those concerns rather than allow them to undermine your value system. Does that make sense? Number three, try and determine if someone is just toying with you or teasing you, or if they're really genuinely interested in having a conversation. If you don't know intuitively, then ask them, are you serious? Are you serious? Are you serious? Are you kidding me? Okay, so just ask them that question. Just determine that before you go on. Number four, another tactic that I think is helpful is asking questions. Personally, I don't think we have to always know the right answer. If we appear to have all the right answers, you know, we might look like a kind of know-it-all. What also might happen is that when they try to catch us, you know, we might wind up feeling cornered and we might not be comfortable at that point saying, I don't know, to that question, whatever that question is. So if there's something you don't know, don't be afraid to say, that's a good question. I'm not really sure. But always try and bring it back to the point. If the question that you're being asked that you don't know the answer to is really some kind of hypothetical question, we've talked about this before, you know, what's happening is they're trying to get it away from the point of why you're vegan. And perhaps the reason you're vegan is because you don't want to contribute to animal suffering. And if that's the point, if that's your truth, if that's the point, you know, bring it back and don't worry about saying something like, you know, that's a really good question. I'm not really sure, but really the point is what it comes down to for me is that I really feel good not contributing to the exploitation or suffering of another. You know, you just bring it back to that. And as far as asking questions goes, if someone says something like, I could never do that, I could never be vegetarian, ask them why. What do you perceive as being so difficult about being vegetarian? Or if they say, I don't want to know what happens to the animals, you could ask, what are you afraid of? What do you think would happen if you knew? Do you have animals? Did you ever witness an animal being hurt? Was it hard? Was it painful for you? I mean, try to engage them to reflect on their own thoughts and feelings rather than trying to have the right answer all the time. Now, that doesn't mean you can't answer questions, but I just want to give you that out. Don't be afraid to ask questions too. I think it's effective. And I think it's helpful in terms of just developing relationships with people. Number 5, smile. If you consider yourself a joyful vegan, then act like it. Smile, laugh, be joyful, radiate the peace and joy you feel. That will attract people more than anything else. That's what being attractive means, literally attracting people. It means to draw people toward you. But it also helps you to stay sane. You have to laugh. You have to laugh at some of these things. Now, don't laugh at people, but if they're playful enough or if you have the right connection or the right moment, you can find a way to just laugh in response to something they say. Again, if it's genuine, if you really feel that way. But I think you want to be careful not to say something like, that is so ridiculous. That's the most ridiculous thing I've heard. Because I think that some people really believe some of these things and you don't want to make them feel stupid or belittled. As ridiculous as it may sound to you, because some of them are ridiculous, they may sincerely believe it. And I certainly don't want to turn people off or make them feel bad. That's not my intention in doing this. My intention has to be clear before I respond. And my intention, in general, is not to get people to change their mind. That's not my intention. My intention is to provide the truth or accurate information that will enable them to assess this stuff on their own. So laugh, but don't laugh at them. Okay. Now, number 6. My final piece of advice for responding to people's questions is don't do it via email or in some kind of online forum. Now, if a coworker or a friend or a family member has an obviously genuine question, you know, like, where did you buy that stuff? You can answer. You can respond. That's not what I'm talking about. I suggest not getting into a debate with someone via email, whether that person is a friend or an acquaintance or coworker. And I also suggest that you don't get into a debate in some kind of chat room or message board when they're strangers. The internet creates the illusion that there's not another human being on the other side of that computer. It's too impersonal. It leaves open too many opportunities for anonymous attacks. I'm very grateful that I haven't been the recipient of hateful email from people. Most people who write to me are very respectful. Even those who disagree with me, their emails tend to be very respectful. But there have been a couple emails I got in response to some articles that I've written that are just kind of out there. And a couple of these emails stand out. And they were just kind of curt. They were cold. They were insensitive, if not a little mean, these emails. And now when I get something like that, when I get something that's just kind of on the edge, I have a pretty good sense of when it's worth responding. Sometimes the delete button is just a really wonderful thing and it's not even worth it. And I know that. But if someone's just kind of on the edge and I can just tell that they're just being a smarty pants, then I reply. And in these two situations, these were two separate situations. I replied firmly but respectfully, stating my views, whatever this issue was. And I remember in each instance, each person wrote back and said, God, I'm so sorry. I didn't even expect a response. I, you know, completely forgot there was another person on the other side of that email, and they apologized for jumping on me or whatever the issue was. But the point is that it's just so easy to be a schmuck, you know, in the age of the internet. And I think personally that it's a waste of time to have debates with people online. I also think that it just allows for too many potential misunderstandings. You can't hear someone's inflection or tone. You can easily take something the wrong way. And besides, you shouldn't be typing that much anyway. Right. And I know because I type too much and I suffer for it. So don't type that much. So unless someone is genuinely asking you for resources or advice or tips or recipes, keep the animal rights and vegan related discussions and debates face to face. My personal opinion, take it or leave it. You know, we're not perfect. This whole all the stuff I'm talking about here, it's not about perfect responses and being perfect. And Lord knows I'm not perfect. But I'd like to attempt to address some of the responses we often hear after we tell someone we're vegetarian or vegan and just offer some of kind of my responses and, you know, kind of how I think about it and what I would say in those situations. Now, as a quick aside, one listener recently shared with me a collection of her favorites upon becoming vegetarian about 5 months ago. And I encourage you all to share your favorites with each other on the message board. Some of you may want serious responses to questions you get, but some may have just left you dumbstruck and they may be worthy of sharing with others. And I'm sure that most of them will be something someone else has heard before. But this is what this listener shared with me recently. So here are some of the responses that she's gotten. My sister knew a guy who had a cousin that was vegetarian, and they had children that broke all their bones. Vegetarians look like they've been pulled through a mulcher backwards. That's original. I have not heard that one before. Vegetarian men have erectile dysfunction. You can't breastfeed without eating meat. So those are some fun ones, just some random fun ones, and there's plenty more. But those are just some responses. But here's some others that we get constantly. And the first one is, farm animals will take over the world if we don't eat them. Or a variation of that is, if everyone went vegetarian, farm animals would take over. There would simply be too many farm animals. We'd be overrun with farm animals. Now, the long and short of this, of course, is that the 10 billion farmed animals that we kill each year in the U.S. wouldn't be here if we didn't breed them in the first place. Farmed animals are not allowed to reproduce naturally. Farmers only breed animals when they can make a profit out of doing so, right? Now, I cannot believe that people actually walk around genuinely concerned that farmed animals are going to take over the world, but it's worth responding to people. It's worth reminding them that it's very unlikely that the entire world will go vegetarian all at once. I mean, it's happening, but it's happening gradually. And as demand goes down, so will supply. But we really need that demand to go down, way, way, way down. It's also helpful, I think, when you're responding to something like this, to say that number, 10 billion, because I don't think that people know that number at all. I don't think people even know that 10 billion land animals are killed every year for human consumption. It's a good way of educating while you're clarifying. But in general, I do think it's helpful to have some facts, some numbers, some statistics in our head for that sort of thing. Just a few things. I personally have a horrible memory recall for statistics, but having a few in your brain is really helpful. They really stick with people. So just a few numbers that you can throw out there. So that's that. That's all I have to say about being overrun by farmed animals. But related to that is a question that goes something like, well, don't you care if farmed animals go extinct? If everybody went vegetarian, then farmed animals as we know them will go extinct. They won't be here anymore. Now, I don't know if I've talked about this before. I may have talked about this briefly, but I want to elaborate here. As you know, there is a lot of talk about the return to small animal-based farms, humane meat, and other such oxymorons, led by or supported by what has come to be known as the slow food movement. Now, I've said before, and I'll say it again, of course I agree with the principles of simplifying the growing and transporting and eating of our food. What I don't agree with is the emphasis on animal-based foods, and obviously that's where we differ. And groups such as Slow Food USA don't just advocate eating animals, they romanticize it. So a group related to Slow Food USA is one called Heritage Foods USA. It started as the sales and marketing arm of Slow Food USA, and their motto is a source for righteous foods. Alice Waters and Eric Schlosser and Bill Nyman are some of the advisory board members, and this place, Heritage Foods USA, is kind of a clearinghouse for cut up pigs and lambs and cut up cows and steer and cut up goats and bison and dead ducks and dead turkeys and dead chickens and all of this sort of thing. Their other motto is, we have to eat them to save them. Speaking, of course, about the animals. Now, I'll let them say this in their own words so you can hear this yourself. Just as the bald eagle and panda bear are on the brink of extinction in the wild, so are numerous varieties of livestock like Bourbon red turkeys, red wattle pigs, tunis, sheep, barred Plymouth rock chickens. If we want to save them, we must eat them. And Heritage Foods USA exists to help accomplish this goal by selling foods from small farms to consumers and wholesale accounts. Now, last I looked, not only did humans actually drive bald eagles, for instance, and pandas to the brink of extinction, and pandas, of course, are still threatened, but the campaign to save these animals did not include eating them. Their argument is that in order to save these animals, they have to create a marketplace for their flesh in order to create a value for these animals in order to save them. If they weren't so successful at feeding this bunk to a privileged public, it would sound like a big joke. And I say that because they don't care about these animals. What it comes down to, besides money, is taste. They have completely usurped the ethics. I mean, listen to that first motto, a source for righteous foods. And they've done such a brilliant job of marketing not meat, but ethics. They're not marketing dead animals. They're marketing tradition. They're not marketing violence. They're marketing emotions, emotional appeals to save these animals, to buy these products. Now, Michael Pollan uses the same argument when he writes, domestic animals only exist to the extent that we eat them. There would be no pigs, no chickens, no cows as we know them if people weren't eating them. I don't see domestication as something we've imposed on other species. I see it as a co-evolutionary arrangement where the animal gets something out of it as well. You know, I'm not even going to comment on that. I'm just going to let you hear it again, and you can draw your own conclusions. Domestic, this is all in Michael Pollan's words, domestic animals only exist to the extent that we eat them. There would be no pigs, no chickens, no cows as we know them if people weren't eating them. I don't see domestication as something we've imposed on other species. I see it as a co-evolutionary arrangement where the animal gets something out of it as well. So according to this argument, by not eating animals, I actually care about them less because I'm contributing to the extinction of animals by not eating them. And it's very tempting to respond to this one with, are you serious? The trouble is, they are serious. So let's be honest. We can protect wild species, even the so-called heritage species from which we have built the animal machines of today, without killing and eating them. And no, in fact, I don't have a problem with certain lines of domestic animals going extinct. What we have done to these animals is not normal. They're not normal animals. If you've ever seen the size of a domestic pig, or if you ever witnessed the trouble with which huge breasted turkeys walk, or if you remember that chickens grow to full growth in 6 weeks, a process that would normally take 6 months, you would know what I mean when I say that I don't believe that there's anything humane or kind about continuing to breed animals in such a way. But I don't have to eat their heritage-bred ancestors in order to save them. And as people become vegetarian and the demand goes down and the numbers of domesticated animals decreases, their wild ancestors can be protected and they could be allowed to forage in the wild like they used to do. The wild animals we kill in order to protect livestock, they'll have their rightful place in the natural order of things and be free. Only good can come from a paradigm where humans aren't imposing their will upon other animals. That's the higher ethic, and animal advocates need to claim that ethic. Okay, so moving on. Now this one barely deserves any energy, but because it comes up enough, I thought I would include it here. Don't you care about plants? They're alive. Don't you have a problem killing plants? It's often asked as somewhat of a joke, but people do tend to expect a response to this question. Look, plants do not have pain receptors. They do not have nerves. They do not have a central nervous system. If you don't have pain receptors, you don't feel pain. But this question is often usually meant to distract you from the real point, which is the suffering of animals. And so I usually say that we may learn some things about plants that we don't know right now, and I may have to reassess my values then. But what we do know right now, for sure, is that animals do feel pain. They do have pain receptors. They do have nerves. They do have a central nervous system, and they suffer just like we do. That's the point. And in terms of living simply and honoring the land, because I'm not suggesting that I don't care about all of the elements in an ecosystem, eating a plant-based diet means that I'm treading more lightly on the land than I did when I did eat animals, because as a meat eater, I was responsible for more plants being killed than I am as a vegan because of all the plants that animals raised to be killed have to eat, all right? So I think this question offers an opportunity to stay focused on the issue at hand and bringing it back to the animals and compassion and simplicity and trying not to get into some scientific debate about plants. And it often comes back to what we've talked about before, where people are trying to catch you at being hypocritical. And obviously, we're all doing the best we can. I'm not advocating any kind of perfect, pure, self-righteous lifestyle. That's not what I'm doing. And that's often where they're kind of going with that when they bring up the plant question, but just stay on point. One response that I know some of you have gotten is, the problem is just too big. Your being vegetarian isn't making a difference. And that one makes me sad because it makes me sad that someone can be so cynical or pessimistic or just plain insensitive. And I know that young people have heard this too. Of course, being vegetarian makes a difference. It makes a huge difference to the animals you're not eating. Now, I haven't found any reliable numbers that I feel comfortable with giving out at this point. But of course, in our own lifetime, we're talking about hundreds of animals, probably thousands if we include all the sea creatures that we eat. To those animals who will not be killed, to those animals who will just not be born to be killed, that makes a huge difference. So don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And as you know, the potential number of people inspired by you just living your truth is huge. So that's more animals who will be saved, more people who will be empowered, and so on and so on. So you're making a huge difference. Remember this quote attributed to Anne Frank. How wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world. We can do so much in every moment of every day. That last part was mine, not Anne Frank's. So you can quote me on that one if you want. But how wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world. That's what Anne said. And I said, we can do so much in every moment of every day. It's just, there's so much we can do. So another question that's kind of popular right now is, you're killing animals by being vegetarian because of all the insects and animals killed to clear the land for vegetable crops and because of all the combines that kill small animals when crops are harvested. Now, I think I've covered this when I've said again and again that this isn't a perfect world and I don't claim to be perfect. I just want to do the best I can to not intentionally harm any living being. And being vegan is a response to that. Once again, it comes down to don't do nothing because you can't do everything. And accusing vegetarians of killing animals in the production of plants is just an attempt to do nothing and feel justified in that complacency. The bottom line is that between the actual animals killed for human consumption, 10 billion land, about 45 billion total, including aquatic animals per year in the U.S. Between the number of wild animals that are killed to protect grazing livestock, it's about 3 million per year in the U.S. Between the number of animals killed in the production and harvesting of grain that's grown to be fed to the grain-fed livestock animals, we're talking about a lot of animals. And what about the birds and the fish that are killed because of the pollution in the waterways and the ecosystems that are destroyed from the pounds and pounds of manure and urine caused by these animals being raised for human consumption? Now, Michael Pollan doesn't mention any of this. But in his best-selling book and his widely read New York Times Magazine articles, he does quote this professor who did some contrived study that claims that vegetarians are responsible for killing more animals than meat eaters are. Now, this scientist's theory has not been validated by anyone else or peer-reviewed in any journal, but it has been very eloquently refuted by other scientists. But I bring up Michael Pollan again because he makes such a point in his writings to refute the benefits of a plant-based diet, and I find his attempts to do so desperate and irresponsible and manipulative. Because however you look at it, the consumption of meat supports the killing of more animals than does the consumption of only plants. I mean, does anybody remember that we drove the bison to near extinction in the American Great Plains, and that enabled us to weaken and confine the American Indians, which enabled ranchers to use the grazing land that the bison were on originally for cattle? Have we forgotten that? I mean, we destroy wildlife. We're destroying wild animals just so we can have cattle grazing. Have we forgotten that? The short answer to the question, aren't vegetarians responsible for more animals being killed? The short answer is no. Okay. Now, there are plenty of other questions and responses that we can address, but I want to finish up with one that many of you have heard, no doubt, and perhaps in another lifetime we even said it. And be honest, just be honest. If you've ever said this before, it's okay. Nobody can see you. We'll find out, but we can't see you right now. And that is, so you're vegetarian, so you eat fish? Now, I know that when we get this question, it's tempting to like want to give them a little Laurel and Hardy smack on the head because last time I checked, fish were not classified as plants. But some people seem to think they are. A few years ago, I went into the post office to buy some stamps, and I asked for stamps that had some kind of animal on them. And I usually hate when people go to the post office and like make the clerks go through all of the stamps because it, because you're waiting in line and the person has to find just the right stamp. It's a stamp, just pick a stamp. But there was nobody else in the post office, amazingly. So I just said, "Could I have a stamp with an animal on them?" So the clerk brought out a bunch of sheets and started going through them. And she was kind of murmuring out loud, that's a plant, plant, vegetable, flower, that's a flower, flower, that's not an animal, that's not an animal. And when she said that, she was holding a sheet of stamps that featured different types of fish. And I said, "That's an animal, I'll take that one." And she said, "That's not an animal." I said, "Yes, it is. Fish are animals." And she said, "No. There's something else. They're like something else." And I said, "No, let's go back to Biology 101, the classification of living organisms. Fish aren't plants, they're animals." And it was really funny in a very sad way because she's like, "No, fish aren't animals. There's something else." And she was convinced that fish were not animals. So we had a biology lesson, and it was actually very funny because she was convinced she was right, but she wasn't able to articulate what she thought they were. She kept going, "I know it's something. I know it's something. There's something else they're called. There's something else they're called." So anyway, yeah, fish are animals. And what else can I possibly say about that? Fish are animals. Now, there was a time when I wasn't eating land animals, but I was eating aquatic animals, and people would call me vegetarian, and I would actually correct them and say, "Well, no, I'm not vegetarian. I eat animals. I eat fish." So fish are animals, and as animals, they feel pain, and they're killed either by being crushed in a net, by having their bladders, their swim bladders explode when they're brought to the surface because they're being asphyxiated, which means they're starved of oxygen, which comes to them through the water. So personally, I think it's just more effective to have a conversation about how fish feel pain than it is to have one about plants suffering or screaming. And you can see how this is an example of a better use of your time. And that's something you're going to have to gauge every time you're confronted with yet another question about your ethics and your way of eating. And I know it might feel maddening sometimes to answer the same questions over and over, but what a privilege it is to have the opportunity to speak on behalf of something you care about, to debunk myths and empower people and be a voice for the truth and for the animals. It's an honor and a privilege, and it's fun. So enjoy it. And you might as well get used to it, because as long as you're out there as a vegetarian, you're going to get these questions. And I have faith in you that you'll be able to do it in such a way that will engage the other person, will be respectful of the other person, and will certainly plant seeds that will someday grow, I guarantee it, and flourish into something that you can't even imagine at this point. So go forth and speak up and speak out and have fun. This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.